It's a football. It's a football.
If you don't know football, you shouldn't be with a microphone in your hand.
Hey, hello and welcome to Soccer Sense, the Sensible Football Podcast, where we are bringing you a very special preview of the FIFA Women's World Cup with a very special guest who is our designated women's football correspondent from now on, honorary life member of that club. Welcome again on the pod, Radha.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed the Euros podcast that we did last time as well, and I'm looking forward to giving a quick wrap-up of what the World Cup holds in for us.
Right. Fantastic. So, Radha, we're coming into this World Cup. It is, one of the biggest events for women's sport, in a sense that it's coming off of a groundswell of not just support and mainstream visibility for women's sport in general, not just football. And we are going into a historic tournament in the sense that it will have one of the highest levels of prize money ever offered in the women's game. It has, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but is it the highest number of teams we are seeing as well, or was the last World Cup 32 teams?
Yes, four more than last time.
It wasn't, right?
Yeah.
So it's one of the biggest and most expanded tournaments, and which has set up the tournament very interestingly. And that's the perspective we'd want to get from you, because you are clearly at the forefront of seeing this evolve, both through your personal experiences, following it as a fan. I'm guessing you play a bit as well. And obviously also looking at it through the eyes of somebody who's written about this game, covered this game, and clearly critically thinks about it. We'll start with the basic noob question, that if somebody is tuning into the World Cup, and thankfully we will be tuning in because Doordarshan has confirmed they will be telecasting it in India, so has FanCode, after a lot of tension there, but if somebody is tuning in for the first time or has forgotten what it was like in 2019, who are the teams that they should be looking out for?
Yeah, so it could be a really long list, but for anyone who's tuning in for the very first time, I would encourage you to go and just Google FIFA Women's World Cup Tournament Preview. There are wonderful articles from media outlets in the US, UK, Australia, a lot of major footballing hubs that are covering this. I think it's just before I get into the teams, the most number of journalists heading over to, both the host nations this time around. So we're going to get a lot of good on-ground coverage. So I would encourage you to just go up and read that. As for the teams, again, if you were just to, by first glance, have a look, you'd sort of navigate yourself towards USA. That's won half the World Cups that have been conducted. China has one to their name as well, although back in the 90s, but they've recently won a very commanding Women's Asian Cup in 2022 that happened on Indian soil. So our Asian sisters, like, I am rooting for them to, make some headlines and maybe upset a few teams that think they're coming and walking along to the semifinals. Again, we have the European champions, England, although missing a couple of key players, which we'll get into later on due to ACL injury, their captain and their golden boot from the Euros, both are missing out, but that's a team that's very, very formidable. We have the Netherlands, who were runners-up last time, and they were, I think, quite surprised runner-ups because their first ever appearance was in 2015, and then all of a sudden, they're 2019 finals. So they're going to be coming back for vengeance. They don't want to settle for silver this time around. And I think I'll give a special shout out to Australia. Australia are one of the co-hosts for the tournament. They've always sort of been in their round of 16 quarterfinals. They've got a few bright stars, but then, of course, you need a full team to carry you through. But Australia's momentum in the last 12 months and the kind of form that their players are hitting at the right time, along with the fact that they have sold out historic ticket sales in their home nation, is going to be a very, very exciting thought. And their three group games and hopefully a bunch of knockouts that they get into will be definitely worth catching up on. So, yeah, I would just name these few teams from different continents.
All right. And of course, let's not forget Olympic champions Canada also, who will get into interval discussions because of the way they're placed in the draw. So rather, we have a draw here which has eight groups and four teams each, so which is basically equivalent to the Men's World Cup of 2022. And yes. And the straightforward format of the top two from each group going out and naturally facing off in the round of 16. And that's where the intrigue begins, because number one, like you mentioned, Netherlands and the US are in the same group, so that should be interesting. Incidentally, both are the finalists of 2019, as you point out. And more importantly, we have a very interesting situation brewing with I think Group D, which has China, Denmark, England, and Haiti, who are making it here for the first time, and Group B, which is Australia, Canada, Nigeria, and Ireland. And if I'm not wrong, these are the two groups which cross paths in the round of 16. So that sets up a fascinating scenario of potentially England Canada game very early on, so under the banner of the same monarch. So how do you so if would you rather be Canada, would you rather be England in this kind of situation right now?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. So I would say that I would rather be England, just because if you look at the Canada's Group B, right? Although it's Group B, people are already labeling it as the group of death, just because, again, as I mentioned, Australia, home crowd, great momentum going into it. Republic of Ireland, they're debutants, but if you look at their players and the clubs that these players play for, they're all in top leagues across the world. A lot of them in the WSL, a lot of them in the Scottish League, as well as in the NWSL, which houses all the USA World Cup champs. So that's a really flourishing league as well. So Republic of Ireland aren't coming just to fill up numbers. They're very keen on playing attacking physical football, as their captain Katie McCabe has already suggested. And of course, we have Nigeria, who I believe have won 11 of 14 women's AFCON championships that have taken place. They've consistently qualified for the World Cup over the last maybe five or six editions, and again, have players that play in top leagues in England and in Spain and so on. So I really do believe that's going to be a group to watch. Of course, on opening day, we have the fixtures because Australia are the host. They play on opening day. I believe they play Canada, if I'm sorry, they play Republic of Ireland, if I'm not wrong. So again, debutant versus host nation, like it can't get more David and Goliath than that fixture. So that's going to be really exciting to watch. I feel like I would be England just because, like, again, great coach coming into this tournament. Although missing a few players, I do believe we can. I'm saying we as if I'm England, but I do believe that England can be the top two in the group. I believe China and England will be that. Although I would love for Denmark to come in and spoil the party for someone. I don't believe Haiti is going to make it at the top two, but again, we'll get to them making it to the World Cup itself. Being an absolutely tremendous deal. So for them, it's going to be an occasion of a lifetime.
All right. And so, speaking of England in particular, and that helps us segue into what I wanted to talk about next, which has become quite a discussion point over the last few months, which is that England are missing a few stars through injury. And incidentally, one of the injuries being cited most commonly is the ACL. And there has been talk about how the frequency of ACL injuries in the women's game seems to be higher, and there does not seem to be a lot of study or understanding going into that. What's your take on that? What has been your experience in terms of watching this particular development, which has cast a bit of a shadow over this World Cup because so many people are missing?
Yeah, it's honestly it's heartbreaking as a fan who, you know, looks out not just for nations, not for clubs, but for individual players that you root for, to see them go down in non-contact. Like, you know, Christy Mewis, she put this very well. She's one of the USA players. She said that I do that motion 100 times a match, but it's just one of those 100 where I turn the same way, but my ligament snaps, right? So there is really no answer to how to stop this from happening, because it's not like they're doing anything extraordinary to get that kind of injury. It's just regular footballing motion that unfortunately results in a disproportionate number of ACL injuries when you look at women's football compared to men's football. So it's really imperative that some sort of documented research goes into this. If I was qualified, I would have done this research. Unfortunately, I'm not. But yeah, it's disheartening to see players miss out on events that comes once in 4 years, being, you know, like for example, Leah Williams and Beth Mead, form of their lives, leading their team to a European championship, and then missing out on a lot of club activity as well as, this World Cup that, it might be your first and your last World Cup. Nobody really knows what the future holds. So I think a couple of things are interesting here. One is the design of boots. Like, that's a lot of research has been done there to say that, oh, it's been designed for male feet. And now we see Nike and Adidas and Puma come in with like particular designs for players that they sponsor. So that's interesting, but hopefully that takes to the masses and all the women wearing football boots can wear boots that are comfortable for them. And of course, then it's a little bit of a macro idea into financing, investing turfs that are of top quality and medical staff that are of top quality, mapping menstrual cycles and whatnot. That's a big discussion, but that's something that's really, really needed because men don't have menstrual cycles. So we never decided that that's something we need to study, but that is definitely something we need to study.
And those are factors, right? As these tournaments become more mainstream, as people get to know women's sport more, I think it's also important to sensitize that there are these issues that we would otherwise not be talking about in a men's World Cup. I mean, even taking on some of the off-field incidents, you look at a Spain or a France where there has been other forms of drama in the build-up to the World Cup, and that's something a male team would definitely never have to deal with. And I say never with quite the authority because I'm fairly sure that that would be the case. So quick take on that before we move on, rather that this extra spotlight and publicity, do you think it helps us sort of go into a path where now we look at women's sport truly multidimensionally, rather than just women playing a sport that men also play?
Yeah, I really hope that's the case. So I was just thinking about this, and a few years ago, Ada Hegerberg of Norway, boycotted her national team for a bunch of years, citing unequal investments in the women's team. Pernille Harder and the Danish team also forfeited one of their World Cup qualifying matches versus Sweden, which ultimately resulted in them not even qualifying for the World Cup. Forfeited again on grounds of outside factors, outside of football, right? So that was like one odd cases that we heard of then. We were like, oh my God, a World Cup match, a World Cup qualifying match, how are you doing this? And then you cut to 2022, 23, and you think that, okay, maybe things have gone better, but you have full teams boycotting their playing, their federation saying that we're not going to show up, we refuse to come, I will retire today, but I will not play under this head coach, which almost feels like we've taken a few steps back, right? So I'm really hoping that this World Cup, with all the eyeballs that are going to be on it, really revolutionizes the fact that we're not just being grateful for being around. We demand certain things that you have been providing to the men unconditionally, and we demand that because we are sporting professionals as well. So I really hope that this is the last time the women have to demand something like this, but I do hope that this time when they demand it, it's heard and it's heard for good.
Right. And with a wider audience than expected, it hopefully does. Which brings us to the story you wanted to talk about. And the story, a lot of people, I think it's flown below the radar a little because incidentally, I read the story for the first time of all places in Bloomberg, I think, not even a sports publication. And that was the story of Haiti and how they made it to the World Cup, which is an incredible story. Story by itself. So I'll let you fill our listeners in on a quick primer on why should we be rooting for the Haiti team regardless of the talent levels.
Well, yeah, I will also let you chime in here because I don't know all the details, but there is like chaos spiraling at home. They've got, I believe their president was assassinated.
There's effectively a civil war. I mean, there was a coup, and then of course they've suffered through natural disasters and a lot of other issues as well.
Yeah, their team doesn't have sponsors. Their entire squad, I believe, lives overseas. They haven't had any sort of friendly games for a long time. And so when we have that sort of lens looking at this team in a competitive group, as we mentioned, we're not looking at this team who's just come again to show up. This team has qualified through official qualifying means to reach the top 32 team competition. And when they step on the field, it's going to be history. I think we need to, unfortunately or fortunately, have a little bit of a perspective when we watch the FIFA Women's World Cup, maybe this time, even the previous time, that debutants coming in are coming in many times despite a lot of circumstances. The reason they're debuting at 2023 is probably because up until then there was like no concept of them even appearing at this world stage, right? So when we look at Haiti, we look at Jamaica, Jamaica had to crowdfund their way into a World Cup, which is that's something you do at like Sunday league level, right? Like, can you pitch in and we'll take a van and we'll go to the field? You don't do that when you're in the
I
World
think
Cup.
the last time we saw a Jamaican team crowdfunding their way into anything was in the movie Cool Runnings when you're talking about the bobsleigh team in the Winter Olympics, I guess.
Yeah, so I mean, it's shocking that it's happening in this day and age, and you know, it's happening. A federation is not even providing money to their top senior team, right? So when we look at a lot of these teams, it'll be really cool if we have like a certain appreciation for the fact that they've shown up and the fact that they're doing this for all the people back home, despite natural disaster or unfortunate civil war that's taking place in their nations, or the fact that maybe their federation doesn't give two shits about them, but it's really about what they're doing that moment on for the future, despite whatever's happened in the past.
Right. And like you say, that this feels like a moment where, you know, it's a pivotal moment, it's a inflection point in terms of where the game goes next. But we'll probably talk about that towards the end of the tournament, and hopefully we get you back on the pod to do a review. But now we'll put you under the personal spotlight. That personally speaking, what would be your dream final scenario? What matchups would you like to see throughout?
Tarek, last time I said anything on
We
this
know how
podcast.
that went. So what we'll do is, maybe not the final, but matchups that you might want to see leading up, even among teams that you don't necessarily have personal investment in, emotional investment, that is.
So I'll give you a few teams that I'm really looking out for, regardless of which team they play. The Philippines is someone that I, some team that I have a personal connect to because I covered them in the Women's Asian Cup when they came
Right.
over, and they were that underdog team. They were like, "Oh, we've come to explore what our boundaries are," and then they pushed their limits and they've reached a World Cup. So I'm definitely going to be looking out for the Philippines. I think France, they hosted the World Cup last time around. They got knocked out to the eventual champions and they lost in the quarterfinals. They're coming back with vengeance, and not just with vengeance, they're coming back with a new head coach as well, who is a very reputed coach in the footballing world. So I do believe that they've clicked. They have clicked, and I'm going to hopefully see them shine much brighter than they, you know, did in their home World Cup. Of course, as you mentioned, Canada is a team, one out of two in this 32 lineup, that doesn't have a domestic structure yet or a domestic league, which is honestly, it's
Astonishing.
so shocking to even say that statement, considering they're Olympic champions and the fact that they consistently perform at top level football despite having any sort of structure back home. One other team I'm going to give a shout out to is New Zealand because they're co-hosts, which is lovely for them. So New Zealand is quite interesting because they're always at the World Cup, given their Oceania qualification system. They
Right.
more or less always make it to the World Cup, and in fact, in 2019, in one of their group games versus Netherlands, who were eventual finalists, I mean, I watched that entire game. It was zero all till 90 plus something, and a freak goal or a mistake goal went in, and they lost. But they really, really push limits of teams when they play very well. Because they're so far down south, and all their players play in US and England and whatnot, they're unable to fly back and forth to play a lot of friendlies, so they genuinely don't play a lot of friendlies. So it's going to be interesting to see their whole nation come together to watch their team in person in their nation,
Right.
and that's, I feel like, going to be a little bit of a revolution for New Zealand as a whole. We've talked about Australia; they've got like those big Sam Kerr faces, but New Zealand, their team was at the Under-17 World Cup here in India as well, right? I don't think Australia was. So New Zealand are already making their mark in the youth age groups, and hopefully they do make a mark on the Senior World Cup as well. They've got some veterans in Ali Riley, Hannah Wilkinson, who've been playing, you know, multiple World Cups, and I think their backing of their nation will give them that edge that they need.
Right. So these are really interesting matchups and teams that you mentioned, Radha, because I think almost every group has an intriguing matchup early on for whatever reasons. And of course, we were playing the bracket challenge in the office, and we are still not able to make up our minds as to who to pick when it goes past. I think two of my colleagues have at least picked like three different combinations and have still not locked their brackets in. So it's going to be a tightly fought World Cup. And hopefully we shall be watching it through and on SoccerSense. We're hoping to book you back to do a dissection and a review of this once the whole dust settles in.
100%. You count me in for that. I'm definitely going to have my phone on during classes, and I'm going to be watching on Fan Court on DD Sports for TV people. It's a bit late that the broadcast has come through, but again, it's a bit of like, oh, we're so grateful it has come through finally. So just ignoring that whole be grateful angle, it's nice to see that Fan Court has picked it up whenever the sub licensing had come out. And Fan Code on OTT and of course DD Sports on TV. I encourage everyone to go and just fill up those viewership numbers, because literally when someone asks like, what can I do to help, all you can do is be one of those viewership figures. It's that easy.
Absolutely.
Because,
Absolutely.
Yeah, those numbers really hit hard, and those numbers are what the administrations or the people in power are looking at, are the people who are sponsoring tournaments are looking at. And yeah, you can be one of them, and that's more contribution than you can ever imagine.
Yes, you can be part of the revolution, which is why I have allowed my team to be tuning into the matches. They just mentioned today saying that, it's like 4 p.m. kickoffs. I said, great, you just put your phone on. We have a screen on our floor as well, so we might just put it on there too. So, yes, lovely to have you back, Radha. It is always an absolute pleasure to talk to you, and always such an eye-opener in terms of finding out more about the women's game, which we still are. But it's great that we have had back-to-back episodes on the women's game, and hopefully more going down, because that is one of Soccer Sense's targets of the year in terms of
awesome.
Coverage.
Lovely target. So, yeah, I'll be back for sure.
All right. So all the best to the secret team that Radha is supporting. We'll not mention any names.
Yeah.
In danger of jinxing. And we'll hopefully catch everybody back on the review episode later on. So all the best to all the teams. And don't forget to tune in on the 20th of July when all this kicks off.